Thanks for downloading this podcast, which is for personal use only. All contents are copyright Radio Show Limited and must not be reproduced, rebroadcast, or used in any form without permission. For contact details, go to www.radiolemon.com. The FIA World Endurance Championship, exclusively live on radiolemon.com.
Nismo. Nismo. Eat. Eat. Sleep. Race. Repeat.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to RadioLeMond.com and to the coverage of the sixth round of the World Endurance Championship at Shanghai, the Shanghai International Circuit. It's another six-hour dose, and we only have three races to go of this year's season. Certainly going to be a very, very busy November, because I've worked out that there are five weekends in November and we're going to be racing for three of them. So fasten your seatbelts for what is going to be a cut and thrust end to the season, I'd say, with certainly Toyota looking very, very strong. But it's not Toyota that have pole position for this final, not quite final race of the year, but sixth race of the season, with three more to go, as I say. My name's Johnny Palmer. I'm joined by Bruce Jones and by Paul Truswell. Bruce to my right. What to expect then in China, Bruce?
I think if the weather stays dry, we're going to have a great race, but it is going to be between Toyota and Porsche. Porsche have really been ramping up their speed. We'll come back to what happened at qualifying in a minute, but Audi, they just don't have the pace. We know they've occasionally picked up results, but it's becoming harder and harder at each subsequent round for them to stay in the battle. Of course, they'll be making pit stops at different points, potentially to the other two works teams at the front end, but it really is looking very, very good for Toyota, it must be said. They're sitting on the points lead in the championship, and it's all to play for, but it's a big circuit, plenty of space, as we know, enormously long straights, and that's really where the Audis lose out. They just don't have the grunt.
The third voice you will hear during our coverage of the 6 hours of Shanghai is Paul Truswell. And Paul, again, what sort of thoughts do you have after qualifying, which was a very interesting session, particularly for the prototypes? What sort of thoughts do you have going into this race?
Yes, well, I mean, qualifying for a six-hour race doesn't really matter, does it? I think, it's not to say that qualifying isn't hugely entertaining, but when it all boils down to it, over the course of 6 hours, whether you're starting on the first, or the second, or the third row, isn't that important. However, I mean, Bruce's point about Audi's being not on the pace is an absolutely valid one. I think they're finding, particularly at this circuit, just as they did at Fuji, that the fact that they're in the 2 megajoule category means that they're not just up there with the big horsepower boys. However, that doesn't mean to say you write them off, because Audi does have this habit of winning with the slower car. A little phrase that I use quite a lot, which is something that Audi does very well. They will optimize their strategy. I suspect that they will have a little bit more flexibility with their strategy, because they're definitely consigned to the brigade of the six stoppers, whereas I have a suspicion that Porsche, possibly Toyota, might be trying to do the race on five. Now, if you've got six stops and the safety car does appear, then you've just got a bit more flexibility in the decisions that you make. And that's where Audi's advantage comes. You know, they've got strategical wizards on the pit wall who can make instant decisions. They've made sort of secondary plans for all eventualities, and I think that's where Audi's advantage is going to lie, in their ability to pick up the pieces should anything kind of fall off the table of Toyota. A great battle in prospect between the two Toyotas, of course, because there doesn't seem to be any team orders between the two of them, although one is very much in the championship and the other one isn't. As far as the two Porsches are concerned, I think it'll be interesting to see if they're fighting for that third podium slot, or whether they've got Audi's biting on their heels. And I mean, they'll be learning a lot, will Porsche, through their through this first season. And I think it'll be interesting, I mean, not trying to do away with this season already, but looking forward to next season, how people make the steps up into next season, because I think next season will be a fascinating one,
because Audi have to come up with some kind of response to all of a sudden a lot of competition after having it their own way for several seasons. The race, by the way, will start at 11 a.m. local time and take us through till 5 p.m. in Shanghai. The Shanghai International Circuit, all 16 turns of it, is now 10 years old. and clearly most famous for the Formula One Grand Prix, the Chinese Grand Prix, but nevertheless, the World Endurance Championship is also making its name here at the venue and pulls a decent crowd in as well. Remember in 2004 it cost something like £2.6 billion to actually build the thing, and it's a great venue. As you say, I think one of the real linchpins of the circuit, Bruce, is that massively long straight that comes out of turn 13 and then hard braking into turn 14, a classic overtaking area.
Well, but it's also made interesting by the line you're on when you leave the corner, because there's a little right-hand kink and then that little blast up to the final corner, the one where famously Lewis Hamilton ended up in the gravel trap when he tried to go in the pit lane in 2007. If you can get yourself on the inside line and go wide, you've got another passing. You can shape up a passing manoeuvre into that final corner. So the battle isn't lost if you lose a position down into that hairpin. But it's a big circuit, so there's plenty of space for the drivers to go about passing the GTE class cars. And that first sequence of corners, turns 1, 2, 3, 4 on the opening lap. I know it's a 6-hour race, but some people are going to really fancy taking that outside line around outside of 1 and 2 to be on the inside of the dipping downhill 3 and 4. But it's an extraordinary circuit. When I was there, I always walk the circuit. You feel a million miles away from the pits, and you can see them because the grandstand opposite is so enormously tall.
Yeah.
But, you know, often there's quite a lot of smog around and you almost feel separated. You're on a different part of the circuit if you're at turn 13. It really does feel a very, very long time, long distance away from the heart of the circuit, the pits and the paddock. But an interesting circuit nonetheless.
If you listen to our coverage for the previous round at Fuji, I need to point out to you that there have been a number of changes in terms of drivers within certain teams. Also, we don't see one or two cars here this weekend, but also a couple have been added as well. So the number 9 Lotus had 3 drivers in it at Fuji, but in fact we keep Pierre Kaffer and change Christophe Bouchy for Lucas Auer, who is Gerhard Berger's nephew. So single-seater ace, but to my knowledge, this is one of an early ventures into prototype racing. No James Rossiter, to my knowledge. So that will be a two-driver car, number 9. Also, looking down the list, we welcome back the two extreme HPDs, the Extreme Speed Motorsports HPD ARX-03B with their Honda engine. So Scott Sharp, Ryan Dl, Ricardo Gonzalez in the number 30 car, and then Ed Brown, Johannes van Overbeek and David Brabham in the 31. All change at the 35 Oak Racing car. Kike O'Hara raced at Fuji along with Gustavo Yakimen and Alex Brundle. We don't see any of those drivers. Instead, change to David Cheng, Hoping Tongue and Mark Patterson, who I last saw at Donington Park, and he told me he was retiring from the United Autosports Audi, and I thought all sports car racing, but clearly he's been coaxed back into that Oak.
Oldest driver in the race, Johnny.
At what age?
Oh, 63, I think.
And the best cartoonist, I've heard. I hear he loves to draw cartoons of his teammates, and they're very well received. So there you have
it. I see. Excellent. Also, a car I didn't see on the entry list is the number 61 Ferrari, the AF Corsa car. Is that because it didn't take part in a session, or...?
No, it's not here.
It's not there.
It is
right.
There, but it's not in the race. Neither of the two GTE AM AF Corsa cars are participating in this race.
61 and 81. So I saw them on an original entry list, and then I didn't see them again, so I wondered what had happened. But, yeah, no Brett Curtis, no Mike Skeen, and no Jerome Blokamolen, therefore, in the 61 car, and no Stephen Wyatt, Michele Rugolo, or Andrea Bertolini in the 81. There's been a change in the number 88 Proton Porsche. Klaus Bäckler raced at Fuji, but he's replaced by Wolf Hensler. Matteo Cressoni gets into the number 90 car in place of Jeff Segal. And the number 95 Aston no longer has Nicky Team in it, at least for this meeting. He is replaced by Richie Stanaway, but Christian Poulsen and David Heinemeier Hansen are still there in the 95, and I reckon that's all the adjustments.
Well, there's one other thing to say is that Nicolas Lapierre won't be participating for Toyota the rest of the season. Toyota have announced that he'll be staying at home, so the number 8 Toyota will be just driven by Anthony Davidson and Sebastian Buemi for the rest of the season, obviously including this race. The other point to pick out. I tried to choose my words carefully when saying that the GTE AM AF Corsa cars aren't at Shanghai. They are at Shanghai because they get loaded into the container that takes them from Fuji to Shanghai. So if they don't go to Shanghai, they kind of have to stay in Japan. So the cars are there, and one of them has been snaffled by the 8th Spadar Motorsports team, number 90. You'll be used to that being an orange car, Johnny.
Yes.
Well, it's not. It's red. It's become, effectively, they've nicked one of the AF Corsa cars. I think it's a 61 car. They've nicked it in order that Gianluca Roda can drive a red Ferrari, because apparently he's always wanted to do so. He doesn't want to drive an orange Ferrari. So the car itself is a full AF Corsa car, but it's got a number 90 on the side, and it's entered by 8-star Motorsport rather than AF Corsa.
So where's the orange 8-star Ferrari then? Is that somewhere around the back of the of the paddock? It's also come on the transporter.
Yes, indeed, absolutely, unloved by its owner.
Ah, to be in the position to have so many Ferraris, you can't actually race all of them, and they have to be stuck on the trailer. Fair enough. So, and let's hope that we'll see a kind of full complement of Ferraris at the next meeting. Remember, it's Bahrain and then Sao Paulo, Brazil, to complete the 2014 World Endurance Championship. Is this an appropriate time to talk about qualifying then?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Go on.
Well, you said it didn't really matter, but nevertheless it was an interesting session because we had two cars with exactly the same aggregate time.
Same aggregate time, same average lap time over the four laps. That's right. Don't think that's ever. Well, I know it's not happened before in this form of qualifying. We've had races in which cars have set the same qualifying time down to the thousandth before, but this is a first that it's happened over a four lap average. Have you got the individual times? Do you want me to go through those?
Yes. Why not?
Right.
Not for all the cars in the field, Paul.
So we'll go through the individual times for the first two cars, because it was the Porsche number 14 which ended up on pole position by virtue of a 147.036 and a 147.606 by Romain Dumas, and then a 149.115 and a 149.443 from Mark Lieb. So two slower times, but so two in the 47s and two in the 49s. Whereas the Toyota number 8, Anthony Davidson and Sebastian Buemi. Anthony Davidson did a 47.847 and a 48.087. So two laps slower than were done by the Porsche. But then Sebastian Buemi did a 48.6 and a 48.6. So very consistent times amongst the four laps that were set by the Toyota meant that they both ended up with an average of 1 minute 48.300. So four consistently quick laps from the Toyota, two fast ones and two less fast ones from the Porsche, but they will share the front row. And as we saw at Fuji, quite astonishingly, the beginning of the race there was very fraught indeed. So whilst I said qualifying doesn't matter, these days, such is the pace, you do get a huge amount of battling going on just to get track position, because if you've got track position, of course, then you can develop your race plan a bit more easily.
But it's also amazing, Paul, that we're talking about the first two on the grid. They were that identical time after the aggregate of the four laps. But the Timo Bernhard, Mark Webber, Brendan Hartley Porsche, its aggregate was only 0.024 of a second slower than the lead duo. It's extraordinarily close.
Indeed so, and the second fastest lap of the session was set by Mark Webber in the number 20 Porsche. So if we would be in, shall I call it, old-fashioned or traditional
qualifying mode, on the grid,
then we would have a Porsche front row, because, say, the Porsche number 14 setting the fastest lap of 147.036 and the second fastest lap being set by Mark Webber at 147.137.
And outside of P1, what news from LMP2?
Well, P2 story very much the same as we've been coming to expect. The G-Drive Racing Ligier seems to be the fastest thing out there. Romain Rissanoff and Olivier Pla, the two drivers who set the quick laps, and the fastest P2 lap of 153.914. The average for the G-Drive car was a 154.327. The G-Drive car looks a very quick car indeed. And, of course, what they're going to be trying to do at Shanghai this weekend is to get some points in the bag, because as far as the championship's concerned, the championship lead at the moment is held in P2 by the KCMG team. It's held by the SMP team. You have to have acronyms in your entry name if you're a P2. Even G-Drive is a bit of an acronym, isn't it? So the SMP team leads the championship, and G-Drive will be looking to pick up some points in the championship in order to get back into that championship with, as you say, two races still to go after this one, so 50 points to play for as far as teams are concerned. So the Ligier, very quick indeed. As far as best of the rest, the KCMG car, local car, of course, local team, Chinese entered team, the KCMG Orica with its Nissan engine, and drivers of Matt House and Richard Bradley and Alexandra Imperatori. They'll be out to do as well as they can. The Extreme Speed Motorsports HPDs, I have to say, a little bit disappointing. Not quite on the pace. They just didn't quite seem to have that edginess that we're used to seeing with them in the American Le Mans Series races. But, so slightly disappointing. But then again, they're in it for the long haul, and I think we'll be looking for the two Extreme Speed ESM HPDs to show consistency and be in there at the end.
Yeah, it's not quite suck it and see. They're too experienced for that, but certainly it'll be their first appearance here in Shanghai, so they are learning as they go. But looking at their times relative to the G-Drive Ligier, there's quite a gap, 2.5 seconds, so it is quite a chunk. Cars now going out onto track in Shanghai, headlights blazing as they work their way around to the grid.
Have we mentioned the GT stuff yet? Because, no. Sorry, I was diving in and out with one or two technical problems with my headphones, but I'm with you now, for good, hopefully. So Aston Martin driver Stefan Mucha, Darren Turner, claiming the first pole of the year in GT Pro, and they managed to leapfrog the factory Porsche shared by Pile and Fred McAveekey after setting his best time on his third flying lap aboard the Aston Vantage. So it's Mucha and Darren Turner on pole position for the first time this year, Paul.
Yes, I mean, GTE is going to be GT Pro is going to be its usual ding dong big hitting race. I mean, the beauty of it, I'd say the beauty of it is its simplicity. You've got two Aston Martins, two Porsches, and two Ferraris. All of them have just two drivers each. That's not quite true, because the 99, the Craft Bamboo Racing Aston Martin has three drivers, and that's a little bit of a misnomer, because for my money it's a bit more of an AM than a Pro, but it's in the Pro category with Alex McDowell, Darryl O'Young and Fernando Reiss, the three drivers. They are, theoretically, they are an AM lineup, because that's a silver or two silvers and a gold driver lineup, whereas everybody else in the GTE Pro category are platinum drivers. You may have Nick Tandy, depending what which entry list you've been working off, in one of the Porsches, but he's not. The two Porsches are both two-driver cars, Fred McAveekey with Patrick Pile, as you were saying, Johnny, and Rickard Leitz with Jörg Bergmeister in the other one. Aston Martin need some consistency. I mean, they've been very quick, and it's been a disastrous season for them, because they just haven't quite been able to get the consistency that they've needed, and ended up not really handing it on a plate, because Porsche and Ferrari have had to battle for their wins. But by rights, Aston should be leading this championship by a country mile, as they do in GTE AM. But in the GTE Pro class, you sort of got to feel that Darren Turner and Stefan Mucha deserve a bit of luck in that championship, in that car.
Paul, it must be said, I talked earlier about how the first sequence of corners is quite an exciting one at Shanghai, but the last thing that Darren Turner or Stefan Mucha will want this time is excitement at the first corner after what happened last time out, the clash that in Fuji that cost them the race, and they ended up way down the order. So obviously they'll have to behave very well. Who's at the wheel this time? It's Stefan Mucha who starts the race, so not Darren Turner. So he will obviously understand fully the importance of not having a collision with a teammate, of course, as happened to them last time.
Exactly so, and no, and I think that is important. That you know, you need a clean race, and these GTE cars are going to be looking at what Plan A looks like at a four-stop race. They'll be looking to run to an hour and 10 minutes, something like that, on every tank full of fuel, and then trying to eke out the fuel so that it lasts to enable them to do four pit stops. Certainly Ferrari will be looking in that kind of area, and we'll just have to see how economical the Aston and the Porsches can be.
Darren Turner and Stefan Mucha are equal seventh in the championship, by the way, on 56 points, just the one win so far this year in Austin, Texas. 2 points in front of them, the other Aston Martin of Christian Poulsen and David Heinemeier Hansson. This is in the GT drivers as a whole. And then above those drivers are the two Porsches, so McAvicii, Lietz, Holzer and Bergmeister. They're third, and Bergmeister actually just 2 points adrift of Holzer. So it goes 61 for Bergmeister, 63 points for Holzer, and then Lietz and McAvicii are... No, they're not on the same either, are they? Richard Lietz is on 73, McAvicii on 81.5, but tied at the top after a cracking season. 3 wins from 5 races, Jean-Maria Bruni and Tony Villander for AF Corsa in their Ferrari. So they lead by 131 points, which is a lot of ground to have to make up. As far as the World Endurance Drivers' Championship is concerned for the prototype drivers, it is Anthony Davidson and Sebastian Buemi who lead the way. Nicolas Lapierre, of course, was matching them for points up until the Texas round, and then we didn't see him at Fuji, and as Paul remarks, we won't see him for the rest of this season. So it's between Davidson and Buemi effectively, and they'll be racing together till the end of the season. 122 points they have. Lapierre you can more or less discount, sadly. And then in equal third position, it's André Lotterer, Benoît Trelluet and Marcel Fessler, all on 93 points, puts them equal third in the championship. Big crowd. There's a lot of people in that grandstand.
Big crowd in very, very big grandstand, so it really is, yeah, a big crowd.
And a spectacular sight to have all the cars lined up on this long start and finish straight with that great oval above, which is almost like a viewing centre.
It's the media centre. Okay. At one end, and the other end is a great big hospitality, these great wing-shaped sections above the circuit. And there, I'm trying to remember what floor you have to go up to get in them. I think it's about the 11th floor, just to give an idea of the scale of the place, and the view from them is fantastic. And in fact, if you're at the top of the grandstand, you can see, smog permitting, to the far end of the circuit.
Yeah.
But if you look out the other way, you think, Mike, you really are very, very high up. I think it's 14 stories, 14 stops on the lift before you get to the top.
So you require the lift to be working then, do you?
You do, rather, yes. Yes.
The weather is bright and sunny, or it has been bright and sunny. There was very heavy rain earlier on this morning, Fuji, Shanghai, Chinese time. But the forecast calls for dry conditions for the rest of the afternoon. It's just coming up to 10:45 Chinese time. So the race will start at 11 o'clock local time and run through until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The thing that possibly teams are going to have to look out for, rather than have to worry about rain, is the temperatures. The forecast I'm looking at is showing that as the afternoon wears on, the temperatures are going to drop off fairly rapidly. Towards sort of 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, we could be looking at 2, possibly even 3 degrees centigrade lower by the end of the race than we do at the start of the race. And so that might be something that teams need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and what are we looking at the moment, temperature-wise?
The track temperature is 17.2 degrees, the air temperature up 17.9 degrees. The wind is running at 16 kilometres from the south. And as I say, that's predicted to change during the race and come around to the north, and that's what's going to cool it down. So
it'll also drive
degrees,
them down that long straight enough, quite nicely. The wind on their tails.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, the track. Which way is the track, Orin? No, the track. The now you've been here Bruce, that you may know better than me.
In fairness, Paul, when I've been there, I've very seldom seen the sun. It's almost always been uniformly grey, but I do seem to recall the sun is behind the main grandstand, I think. I think yes, effectively, if you put that on the bottom of your image, the top end's north.
Yes, as I say, I've got... okay, that's because I've got one track map. I've got two track maps, and they're both oriented differently.
Actually, I'm now starting to have doubts. I'm just trying to remember the sunny day when I was there. Was the sun coming across me as I walked down the long straight, or was it not? It seems
so. Certainly, the grid is in the shade at the moment of the main grandstand. But I think that the wind, if anything, is going to be in their faces down that long straight, which is not the start-finish straight, incidentally. The long straight is the one immediately before the start-finish straight. The circuit, difficult to describe. Just look it up if you're that interested.
Well,
it's supposed to represent the Chinese character, isn't it, Bruce?
Yeah, Shang, as the symbol of Shanghai, which actually I think was picked up when... someone pointed to a manhole cover that had the city crest on it, and suddenly Herman Tilke thought, aha, I like this. We can use this.
This is RadioLeMond.com and the Nismo Countdown to Green to round 6 of the World Endurance Championship. Paul Truswell, Bruce Jones and me, Johnny Palmer, to take you through the 6 hours of Shanghai very shortly. Now, of course, as we've mentioned, Porsche looking pretty strong this weekend, maybe not quite as quick as Toyota, but we'll have to see how the 6 hours unfolds, qualifying one entirely different beast from a 6 hour race. But the Porsche 919 hybrid is only in its first year of racing, remember. It's already been very competitive in qualifying and the World Endurance Championship races. John Hindhoff spoke to Porsche number 20 driver Timo Bernhardt after qualifying on Saturday to find out how the car is being developed. But first of all, he asked Timo how easy or hard it will be to overtake on the Shanghai track.
We probably see a similar thing to Fuji, which we all didn't count so much on. When you're in traffic, you get pretty quickly pick up on the tires. And I think in Shanghai it's the same, and you don't want to catch that. So here, plus the traffic, on top of the traffic that you have, you always also have to choose the line which you take to get the least amount of pickup. So it's pretty tricky.
It's been a really great second half of the season so far for the two Porsche 919 hybrids. It seems as though all of a sudden the car makes sense to everybody. That's probably far too simplistic, but looking from the outside, the car looks more balanced. It looks like you guys are able to put it where you want it, and the performance levels and the competitive levels have certainly gone skyrocketing.
Well, yeah, we still have areas where we have to improve, and this is the thing. We still stay very... we still have hard work is ahead of us, and we know that. And even though today with the pole in P3 and being very close again to pole with the car 20, for example, we're not thinking that we're ahead of everybody right now. It's just that in quali at the moment we look a bit stronger, maybe, or we can fight against the Toyota. But the Audi was a bit behind, but you can never forget them for the race. So Toyota will be very strong, and we still have areas we have to improve, and we know that, and we're working on that. But for sure, for the first time being here, and yesterday they also rained out for the last practice, I think we did a pretty good job today.
The first time that we've worked this season with the new smaller Michelin tyres, and clearly everyone, including Michelin, is still getting their heads around that tyre degradation. We hear everyone talk about it in Formula One almost all the time, but it's an issue here as well, and managing the tyre wear is absolutely key.
Absolutely. We have tracks like at Le Mans, for example, that you can do 4 stints, and the stints are longer now because we consume less fuel than in the past. Don't forget about that. So we can do 4 stints on the tire in Le Mans without having a big degradation. You can push all the way through. And some other tracks like Fuji, or especially here, it's a different story. Here you really have to manage your tires, and it's not going to be easy. That's going to be a key factor, but I think that's for all of them. But at the moment I see Toyota a bit on front on that topic.
They seem to have a car that is more consistent on its tires throughout the 33-34 laps, whatever the stint length is going to be.
Absolutely. When I look at some of the on the longer runs yesterday, yesterday was not a lot of time in the dry, but when I see some of the longish runs they did, it was quite impressive again. I hope that in the beginning of the stints we can challenge them, but I think yeah, for the end of the stint, definitely for me, they are the favorites for tomorrow. But we'll see. I mean, a lot of things can happen. I mean, some people even speak about rain in the beginning. So, I mean, we never know here.
Porsche have done a cracking job. This is, let's not forget, the first season for the 919, for the LMP car. We keep talking about getting you guys on a podium. We've seen that. You've had now two pole positions for Porsche throughout the season. That win, it would be a phenomenal achievement for Porsche to get a win, but you guys must be starting to believe.
Yeah, but to be honest, we were very focused in the team, and we're very honest as well to our, yeah, to what we can achieve and to what we and to rate how we did. So to be honest, we really concentrate. We look at our feet. We concentrate on our jobs, and everybody in the team is for sure very focused, but for sure very ambitious. But on the other side, I mean, yeah, for sure, victory would be absolutely great, and it's still the goal for this year. But we have to be realistic. I mean, and some of the performances, for example, that Toyota did were very stunning. We know that partly we can compete with them, but over a whole race of 6 hours, I mean, that's a pretty hard test still. And don't forget, the first year, every racetrack is new for the 919 Hybrid, and therefore we do a really good job, I have to say.
And we'll hear more from Timo Bernhardt later on from John Hindoff, though, for the moment. That is it, but we will take a much closer look at the technical challenges of the Shanghai circuit, courtesy of a Timo Bernhardt lap before we start the race. But that just about wraps up our prelude to the sixth round of the championship, the Nismo Countdown to Green. Do stay tuned, though, to RadioLeMond.com and join me, Johnny Palmer, with Bruce Jones and Paul Trusswell. We will take you through every step of the way of the 6 hours of Shanghai.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.RadioLeMond.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world. The RadioLeMond.com forum is full of people who love all forms of motorsport, just like you. People who have opinions and aren't afraid to share them, just like you. People who enjoy following live motorsport on radio, online, on TV, just like you. Go to www.RadioLeMond.com and click the forum tab. Join in and give your passion for motorsport a new dimension. The RadioLeMond.com forum. Just like you. The World Endurance Championship on RadioLeMond.com. The world's greatest sports car events connected.
RadioLeMond.com, thank you for joining us. It is the coverage of the sixth round of the World Endurance Championship here in Shanghai, the Shanghai International Circuit. Three rounds to go, all crowbarred into the month of November. It's Shanghai, Bahrain and Sao Paulo, Brazil to end the season. And this is really where you earn your money, I suppose, within the championship. Clearly, you need to be well placed in the championship. And certainly the Toyota number 8 car is, with Anthony Davidson and Sebastian Buemi now having to race just as a duo till the end of the season. There's going to be no Nicolas Lapierre. But certainly the Toyota looks to be the car to have on a single lap. Can the Porsche match it, though, over 6 hours? It's going to be a fascinating duel to see whether that will be possible here in China. I'm joined by Bruce Jones and Paul Trusswell. Paul will be looking, as always, across the strategy of the race and adding things that Bruce and I just haven't thought about, which is a regular occurrence. And Bruce, situated just to my right, you can you already have a kind of rough idea in your head about how this race should pan out, but the whole beauty of motorsport is it's so unpredictable, and it's very difficult, therefore, to work out exactly what's going to happen maybe in 5 hours' time.
Well, I think so. And the point is that Toyota started the season with a good speed advantage, and therefore they could pick and choose their tactics. But the fact that Porsche are now snapping at their heels, have shown absolutely equal pace in qualifying, down to the thousandths of a second over the aggregate of four laps. I think Porsche, because they're pushing on Toyota so hard, Toyota could be in a position where their options are increasingly limited. They don't have the extra scope, the extra speed anymore, and they're going to be kept right on their mettle. So a little fumble here could have far more consequences than it would have done in the early rounds of the championship.
Any ideas? I kind of know which Toyota tends to be quickest. Is there a Porsche, either the 20 or the 14, which is likely to be quicker? Because there were theories, for instance, at Le Mans, that they were going to send a hare and a... Well, no, Actually, I remember speaking to the pit lane crew, spoke to Porsche themselves, and they said, no, we're on exactly the same strategy. And then quite obviously after about three laps they weren't, because one of the Porsches just started to drop away and the other one started to push hard. So will there be sort of similar strategies here in Shanghai, do you think?
Well, I think what we've seen through the course of the season is actually that Mark Webber is really getting into the groove.
Yes.
He wasn't quite there at the start.
Yeah.
And the last couple of rounds he's proved that he really, really is there. And I mean, okay, look at his pace in qualifying, that was fantastically strong. But I think he's also getting his head around endurance racing again, because he did it obviously piecemeal in the past. And then the fact they've got Brendan Hartley in that car, we know he's an absolute flyer, and Timo Bernhard, what a safe pair of hands. So I think it's actually put the Porsches on an equal footing now.
Speaking of Timo Bernhard, it's time now to take a driver's eye view of the Shanghai International Circuit as the Porsche 919 driver describes a lap. Here's the Porsche track guide.
Start finish straight here in Shanghai, very long. I mean, you get up to speed very high, then you have to break into a corner I've never seen in my life on any other track, including karting tracks. Turn one, quite late break into the corner, and the corner's tightening into corner two, so we already differentiated because it's such a long corner, consistently going closer, and then when it's at the tightest point, opening into a left-hander, which is called corner three, very tight, but then opening into corner four. So I mean, you're basically going into the corner on the edge on the brake, rear light, then you have a lot of understeer, going out again rear light, early on throttle, so very difficult, going then down to a hairpin corner six, downhill braking, quite interesting, opening on the exit, then into the best combination on the track that I like is corner seven, quite quickly, very long, and then the exit going to a right-hander, which is a bit closer, but you have to get the right turn-in point, otherwise if you go a bit offline, you lose the grip completely, into a double left-hander, which is opening again. You see a lot of different radiuses in the corner, so that makes the life of the driver a lot more tricky. A short straight, then hard braking again for a left-hander, which is a bit tricky for us because there's a tire bundle on the inside for the GTs to avoid them to cut. For us, a bit difficult to see it because we're sitting on the left side. Then into a right-hander, which is again divided into two corners because the entry is quite tight. Then opening and having a late banking, which gives us extra grip, but to set up the throttle there is quite tricky because you never know how much you can take there. The long straight, actually, then, pretty long, one of the longest straight except Le Mans that I've ever seen as well, for us, but a good chance to catch traffic, to overtake GT cars without losing time. Very hard braking, good grip though, into a very, very tight hairpin, then short straight again onto a 90 degree last corner onto the front straight. Looks pretty straightforward this corner, but it's quite tricky because it got some AstroTurf at the exit and you don't want to hit that. And there was one lap on the Shanghai International Circuit.
There we go then. So Timo Bernhard taking us through how he drives a lap of the Shanghai circuit. I'm pleased to know that the order of corners that he has corresponds to mine, as in 1, 2, 3 and then followed by 4. That tends to be how it goes. But there are 16 in total. A fascinating sort of corkscrew to kick off the lap, though, that just tightens right-hander, followed by an even tighter left-hander. And then finally the circuit gets going with that quick run down to hard braking at turn six. But they're kind of, apart from that long straight and the start and finish straight, there isn't a great deal to be able to think, because you're constantly having to turn left or right. Very twisty part to sectors one and two, really, and then sector three becomes just get your foot nailed to the floor all the way down to turn 14. The cars are being released from the grid onto their rolling lap, effectively green flag being waved from the middle of the track. The brave man stood right in the middle there to be presented with two lanes of traffic to his left and right, and I'm pleased to see that every car has got away on this rolling lap.
Also pleased to see a blue sky, which is
really good weather.
It's fantastic weather, so hopefully we'll have no weather playing a role in this race. Do you want to touch on starting drivers?
You have the list, I think, do you?
Well, okay, well, let's just go, coming on the screen. Let's go through from the top. We're going to start with Neil Jani leading away from the pole position, Porsche. Sebastian Buemi alongside in the first of the Toyotas. Then Brendan Hartley will start the second Porsche, that's number 20. Alexander Wurz will start the second Toyota, which is number 7. Then Lucas Di Grassi and Andre Lotterer will be the two start drivers for Audi in fifth and sixth places. And then the Rebellions will be led away by Matthias Besch and Fabio Lima. On the fifth row, it will be Olivier Pla in the pole setting LMP2 entry, the G-Drive Ligier, and Alexandra Imperatori driving the Chinese entered, the KCMG Orica Nissan. That's number 47 in 10th place. Then the SMP Orica Nissans with Kirill Ladigin and Nicolas Minassian. They'll be the start drivers for them. The Lone Lotus, only two drivers on board this weekend. Pierre Kaffer will do the honours at the start. Then Extreme Speed Motorsports, David Brabham and Ryan Dayel. They'll be going from 14th and 15th on the grid. And the last of the LMP2 cars, Chinese driver Hopin Tung. That's the Oak Racing Morgan Judd. Down to the GTE class, GTE Pro. It's Stefan Mucha will be in pole position, 17th place on the grid. He'll be starting that ahead of Fred Makiavicki in the faster of the two Porsches, with Richard Leitz going off in the second one of those. That's 92 ahead of 91. Gian Maria Bruni leading the class. He will be heading away for AF Corsa with the sister car, with James Collado starting from the row behind. Then Fernando Rees is in the last of the GTE Pros. That's the second Aston Martin, number 99. Going to the GTE AM, Pedro Lamy will lead away for Aston Martin, followed by Mathieu Vassivière in the Pro Speed Porsche. Richie Stanaway back on board this weekend, the second of the Aston Martin Vantages in this class. And then bringing up the rear, Paolo Ruberti in the 8-star Motorsport, running in a red livery this weekend. They've changed cars. And bringing up the rear, Wolf Hensler in the Proton Porsche, in the 27th car on the grid.
Wolf Hensler didn't race in Fuji, but will do so in Shanghai as the GT traffic weaves from left to right, almost using the whole track there from one white line to the other. Paul Trostwell reminds us that, in fact, it's Romain Dumas to start the 14 rather than Neil Yarny. But otherwise, you were spot on right, I reckon, Bruce.
Yes, I crossed one out. I crossed the wrong one. Sorry.
It's all right.
Only the pole sitter that I got wrong. Oh, dear.
There you go. So Dumas to start from pole. Alongside pole position, the Toyota sitting there alongside it as well, but up towards then this left-hander, the 90-degree left-hander that will take them onto the start and finish line. And the 6 hours of Shanghai for 2014 in the World Endurance Championship about to get underway. They're still under starters orders here with the red lights on the gantry there. They are about to go out, though, and this huge crowd in the main grandstand, overjoyed to see so many prototypes from P1 and P2 hammer their way into this right-hander, which will get tighter and tighter. The two Audis absolutely side-by-side. Has everyone got through just about safely? Yes, they have. It's a Porsche that leads into the left-hander, then Porsche, Toyota, and then two abreast for the Audis, followed by the two Rebellions. And it's going to be very tight here for the first few corners. This is the first chance they get to really open up the machinery down to this tight hairpin at turn number 6. And with alternate Porsche, Toyota. And are the Audis still side by side? They are in fifth and sixth places.
They are indeed, being pushed very, very hard indeed by one of the two Rebellions, who had a little look around the outside down at the first corner. But the lead Porsche has already put about a sixth or seventh car length lead ahead of the better of the two Toyotas as they ran down to turn 6. They're going through the interesting double left-handers, that's turns 9 and 10, and now they're going up towards the far set of grandstands in the distance, and it's Porsche leading the way from Toyota.
So a wonderful start for Romain Dumas in the number 14 919 hybrid. Second position as we run is Sebastian Buemi.
There's been a big collision coming out of turn 10. I saw a car silhouetted, or the KCMG. Oh dear,
and the Ferrari. Yeah, KCMG virtually stripped of its bodywork there.
Well, that's Alexander Imperatori.
Safety car
deployed, says Paul Trustwell as well. Thank you, Trusses, for that. Hardly surprising, with at least two cars off, possibly more.
Yes, it's very hard to see what happened. Just in the background of a picture, as we saw the leading cars going into turn 11, that sort of alternate corkscrew in the background, there was something in the air. And presumably that was the KCMG.
Oh, and a spin under the safety. Well, they haven't quite reached the safety car, but that was one of the SMP racing cars, either the 27 or the 37. It was the 37 car with Kirill Ladigin at the wheel. So the Nissan-powered Orica spinning at turn 14, which is the hairpin right at the end of that long straight. And it's the 51 Ferrari, which has also been involved.
Well, that's Jean-Marie.
Championship leader, is it not?
That is. Championship leader and the championship chaser in LMP2. So now the lead cars behind the safety car are going through turn 2, top of the little crest there, down the hill into turn 3, and the rest of the field closing in behind But that's a six-hour race, but a very, very eventful opening lap, and long faces indeed from Amato Ferrari down in the AF Corsa garage, because of course they were sitting in the lead in LM GTE Pro, but they're sitting at the side of the track now.
Yep, and Bruni out of the car, so that looks to be retirement for the 51 car, and all of a sudden the doors are open for another GT car to win this race and maybe challenge for the championship.
Well, just looking at the replay there, what happened, the KCMG LMP2 car came round the corner and seemed to have a bunch of neutrals and was slow coming out of turn 10 and was clouted because there was a big gaggle of GTE cars.
Yep.
And they were accelerating hard as they took the second of those two left-handers, and just found the KCMG Morgan Judd sitting still in their path.
This is an onboard from a Porsche that we're getting a view of now. That's right behind the 71 Ferrari, so the sister car of the 51 machine, which, as you say, KCMG car coming out of turn 10 with no forward locomotion at all, and with it virtually stopped on the outside curbing leaving turn 10. The Ferrari accelerated as normal and had no option but to collide with it in a big way, and certainly the rear bodywork was stripped away from the KCMG car. That is out of the race together with the 51 Ferrari, and look at the debris coming out of turn 10 there, whereby Bruce, that's got to all be cleared up clearly in what, a couple of safety car laps, I would imagine. It's going to take a fair old time to sort that out. There is a risk of punctures here because there's so much bodywork strewn across the track. Sensibly, the drivers in the prototype cars are staying as far left as they can, and maybe even just a little bit on the grass there, single file.
We're looking at the start was a fantastic one for Porsche, and Romain Dumas, you know, made the break before, long before they got to turn one, ahead of Sebastian Buemi. But it was really the way the Audis were fighting in their wake. It did almost look door handle to door handle, but everyone got round turns 1, 2, 3, 4, where we thought the concertina effect and the constant changing of corner angle, two rights followed by two downhill left and a flat left, but always makes for exciting stuff. Just go run down the order though. It's Romain Dumas who was leading the way when the safety car came out, leading for Porsche ahead of Sebastian Buemi's Toyota. Then Brendan Hartley had moved up into third place, and Alexander Wurz making it Porsche Toyota, Porsche Toyota. Andre Lotterer was the lead Audi driver in fifth place. Lucas Di Grassi running around in sixth. Then Matthias Besch, who had a very good start for Rebellion Racing, holding seventh place at the moment behind the safety car, ahead of the Rebellion sister car with Fabio Lima. Leading LMP2, it's Olivier Pla in ninth place overall, and Ryan Dayel, who, good start, and obviously very easy to pick out with the bright orange nose on the Extreme Speed Motorsport HPDs. So that's the top 10. And then comes Nicolas Minassian in 11th place for SMP Racing, Extreme Speed second car, David Brabham on board, and then Pierre Kaffer in the Lotus. And of course, you picked up, Johnny, that Kirill Ladegan had a little rotation just about the time the safety car came out. He's running around in 14th place.
Just the two cars involved, incidentally, in that incident. I was wondering whether there may be more than that, but it was just the 51 Ferrari and the KTMG car number 47 with Imperatore at the wheel. So we're certainly staring at one retirement in the form of the KTMG car. Just there is a little bit of doubt or something to firm up as to whether the 51 car is actually moving around the circuit. Trust us, you've got sight of one of these GPS maps that gives us where every individual car is at any one point.
Yes, I think I was thrown by that GPS system because it got pulled behind a wall by a tow truck, and I think that took it out of GPS range or something.
I see.
And so my little map that had 47 stationary with 51 just a little bit further up, suddenly the 51 disappeared off the map.
It probably got put through to the other side of the wall, which is halfway down the back straight, so that's between turn 13 and 14, so it was credited with...
Quite, yeah. So half a sector. Confirmed that both cars are definitely retired so early on in the race. Very unfortunate indeed. One of the things that I'm looking forward to sometime this season is a six-hour race without any retirements at all. But I'm afraid we've lost two within the space of the first two laps in this race at Shanghai.
And, well, we should probably make the point that it we assume, was not down to poor driving or driving standards. I think there was, quite clearly a technical issue for the KCMG car, and one of those just unavoidable incidents when you've got so many cars on track piling out of turn 10 all at once and just not enough time to react, sadly, for the Ferrari. It may well have led to a retirement or certainly a technical glitch for the KCMG car, even if there had been no contact. And there was, of course, that spin, which I remarked on at the time, at the end of the long straight at turn 14 for the 37 car, which was Kirill Ladygin, went off on his own, almost asking a bit too much of those brakes and perhaps still cold tyres two-thirds of the way, a bit further than that, around the opening lap. But Ladygin, Kirill Ladygin, is still in the race. He didn't collide with anything, by the way. Lost a few places before they reached the safety car line. And still, the pickup of debris continues at the moment. So, can't see what we're going to be going racing at the end of this lap. Maybe the next one.
Yeah, that was a KCMG. I mean, where did they want to really shine their home race? Absolutely awful. I mean, it'd be bad enough if Alessandro Imperatore, a driver who knows this very well, he's been racing in the Far East for a good half dozen years, had just slid off the circuit. But he came out of the corner absolutely normally, just being shown another replay. And the good news for AF course, it was only one of their cars went into the back of it, because James Collado in the sister car, number 71, was right behind the 51 Ferrari. Bruni couldn't avoid it, but luckily Collado got enough towards the left-hand side of the track not to make it a pair of blunders down there at turn 10. But you can imagine, on the opening lap, they're running 2x2, trying to gain position. They've been through those fast sweepers. They're trying to get the ultimate speed coming out of turn 10 for the short straight up to the far end of the circuit, turns 11, 12 and 13, and heads down, and that happened. And very sadly, the KCMG day, we know it's over and out, but when the garage door gets rolled down, that really is a very, very sad sight indeed. And I'm sure a lot of the people in the grandstands are particularly disappointed. Obviously wanted a Chinese entered car to go incredibly well for their home race, but not this year, unfortunately.
That's their second retirement of the year, incidentally. They didn't make the end of the Le Mans 24 Hours, but they have had 3 second places at Silverstone, Spa and Fuji last time out, plus a win at the Circuit of the Americas. So came into this round third in the LMP2 standings, World Endurance Trophy for LMP2 drivers, behind Julian Canal, Ruman Rusinov, Sergei Zlobin and Olivier Pla. But sadly, Matthew Howson, Richard Bradley and Alexandre Imperatore, who was driving at the time, it'll be a nil point here in Shanghai. So, already had almost 10 minutes of this race, but not a full racing lap quite yet. Well, we almost got there, but of course the cars would have been backing off as soon as they saw the safety car boards, and will have been radioed as well to say that the safety car was out on track. Now, are the lights out? No, they're not. They're still illuminated coming out of turn 10, past the accident scene though, and there's a significantly less debris, I'm pleased to say, coming out of that corner, although everybody's still staying well and truly to the left-hand side, which is not the racing line.
No, indeed. And I just noticed off to the right-hand side of the circuit where the cars ended up, they're just sweeping the runoff area now. They're off the track, but just taking whatever debris is further and further away. But now the field needs to tighten up a little bit, because if they get a sense that the race is about to be underway again within the next lap, they don't want this field to stretch out too far. So, Extreme Speed Motorsport entry with Ryan Dayel is trying to get onto the tail of the Ligier with Olivier Pla. That's in the battle for the LMP2 class honours. And likewise, right at the front of the field, Sebastian Buemi will be trying to take his Toyota right onto the tail of Romain Dumas, who's leading the race as we wait for the restart.
The bizarre thing is that situations like this, where I keep a note of who set the fastest lap of the race thus far, has actually been set by an Aston Martin, number 99, Fernando Reis, by virtue of, probably as you were saying a moment ago, Bruce, just allowing a bit of a gap to build up and then closing it up again on the following lap, is set at 2 minutes 59, and that's the fastest lap. So students of history might want to know the GTE car, fastest of all on the circuit on lap, that was on lap 3.
And that's not bad on a power circuit.
Sorry, say that again, Bruce.
I was going to say, that's not bad on a power circuit.
Quite so.
So we're going around for another lap. The safety car is now going through turn 2, leading Romain Dumas' Porsche and, of course, Sebastian Buemi's Toyota. Down the hill they go through turn 3. That's the first of the right-handers, and they turn left as we go flat. And catching sight of the Lotus, of course, that exited the race in Fuji. As the conditions were getting darker and darker, it suddenly got a lot brighter around the tail end of the Lotus. And Christophe Bouchoux, I think he felt his eyebrows were getting a wee bit singed. That was really quite a fire, and they could not put it out for some time, could they, Paul?
No, that's right, and they've done a great job to get that car working again. I think we're supposed to call it a CLM. It's entered by Lotus, but the car itself is a CLM. It's one of those bizarre little things, and we may find out in the fullness of time why it's called a CLM rather than a Lotus. But the entrant is Lotus. The car is a CLM, but as I say, they've certainly done a great job getting the car sorted out. Bearing in mind that since the Fuji race, it's also spent a week in a container, so it's not kind of been available to be worked upon for all of that length of time. But they've done a great job getting it out.
On the official timing screens, it's listed as a Lotus CLM, but maybe the CLM P1/01. But we'll call it a CLM, shall we?
Yeah,
a CLM by Lotus.
Indeed.
For Lotus. Run by.
Run by Lotus. I think you've got to call it a Lotus just because of the Lotus branding everywhere. But I say it's interesting that the chassis itself is pretty much the P2 car that was run in last year's World Endurance Championship.
Well, the first few cars have really sensed the safety car. Still with lights ablaze, is going to be going off soon because the first four have closed right up. That's the Toyotas and the Porsches. Oh. And one of the Audis is staying with them. That's Andre Lotterer. But Lucas Di Grassi has dropped back somewhat. There seems to be some people waiting in the pits for a pit visit. Number seven.
Well, yes, I mean, the pit lane has been closed. Of course, when the safety car comes out, the pit lane is closed for three laps. The pit entry is now open. And I just wonder whether some teams are going to be using this as an opportunity. If they have to do a splash and dash, and I have a doubt about whether Toyota might have had to do a splash and dash, now is the perfect time to do your splash and dash rather than do it at the end of the race. See what I mean? Do the splash and dash at the beginning of the race, and then you can get to the flag. And I certainly wouldn't be
into the pits go two of the lead cars, both Toyotas by looks things. Number seven, Alexander Wurz, definitely on the grass as he came in, and Sebastian Buemi leading into both Toyotas coming in for that splash and dash very early on.
That was Wurz on the grass, wasn't it? The left-hander is tighter in the pit lane than it is on the track, and almost he didn't quite have enough lock on there, or he was just pushing too hard. But Wurz, two wheels on the grass, and a tidier line for the number eight Toyota just ahead, with Buemi at the wheel. This, incidentally, is the third World Endurance Championship race in Shanghai. The 2012 season ended here in China, but we reckon that this is the first safety car at Shanghai.
It is.
There you go. I thought you'd be able to confirm that for me, Paul. Thank you.
Four old safety car driver in Shanghai is getting his first laps after three races. So, yes, as you say, both Toyotas coming in. Also, Paolo Ruberti coming into the pits in the eight-star Ferrari number 90, the red eight-star car. Drivers, in all cases, staying behind the wheel. Interestingly, I've got the two Toyotas coming out of the pits in the opposite order than they went in. So Buemi led Wurz into the pits, but Wurz has led Buemi out of the pits. So
and that also
quicker turnaround.
And Paul, that also included Wurz wanting to pull away, and they had to suddenly run around the car and check that one of the rear wheels was attached as it should be. So he lost a few seconds there. So certainly a much quicker stop, by about, I'd say, about 5 seconds quicker. On small things, races can turn.
Precisely 5 seconds quicker. Bruce, your eye confirmed by the Alcamil timing system, which shows me how long the cars spend in the pits. And I'm also ably supported this weekend by SBG sports software, who provided me with RaceWatch. And that is a marvellous system of information. So all of the data that's coming to you, you'll give me credit for it, Johnny and Bruce, but it's not really me. It's just this acres of screens and systems that I've been given, which enable me to keep you up to date with what's going on.
The Broom team look capable of clearing acres, using that word again, because they are heading back out onto track. Maybe not the best timing, because there was a Ferrari coming round there.
Well, that was Ruberti after his pit stop. They'd had the two Toyotas come round, and rather, can I say chubby?
Yes, I think you possibly can.
Or maybe he's just wearing a large jacket, but he was the one in the middle of the track who had to suddenly get a bit of a hurry on.
So, more sweeping to be done, and of course it has to be done in the gaps in traffic, which is a dangerous old business, being a marshal. But nevertheless, we are getting towards a point where we can race again at turn 10.
Now, the big key, of course, is were the light. I didn't quite see Were the lights out on the safety car? If they're not, that's great news for Toyota. It gives them more of a chance to catch up to the tail of the field.
No, it'll be another safety car lap for the two Porsches that are out in front. The Audi's now, of course, up to third and fourth because the Toyotas have pitted. And the Rebellions are fifth and sixth, still weaving away. Well, one of them is weaving away. The one in front, which will be the Matthias Besch number 12 car. More of a straight line approach to turn one.
Well, there don't appear to be any other pit visitors, which is interesting. So Toyota have rolled the dice early on. Situation certainly favoured them.
Sorry.
We have others?
Well, Bruce, I've got coming up on the screen here Sebastian Buemi coming in for a second pit stop. Now, you mentioned they had a last-minute pit panic, and he's come in for a second pit stop. Very rapid, but he has made a second stop.
Interesting.
Maybe they feel because there's that extra, at least one more lap behind the safety car, it gives them enough chance to rectify. But that wasn't the one that was slow. That was a slower pit stop, but without any panic the first time round. The panic was with the 7, the sister car, where they just wanted to check the rear wheel.
And yet the 7 got out in front of the 8, though, didn't it?
It did.
Okay, so the 8 coming back in again for whatever reason, but the fact that the 8 came in leading the 7 and then it was the 7 that left first of all, that would suggest there was more of an issue for the 8 car, which they've now hopefully rectified. Second pit lane visit. The car looking a touch slow through turn 3, but now gets going on this run down to the first of the hairpins on the circuit, which is, well, the second of the hairpins really, which is turn 6. Hairpin after hairpin for the first bit of the lap, and then you can finally get going. As the car exits turn 6, the driver gets a great view of the grandstand and the media centre held high up there on the 11th storey. The two Extreme Sport Motorsport cars, Extreme Speed Motorsport cars, very easy to pick out in their bright green plus black livery. And they, of course, have returned to the championship after missing the Fuji route. Even from a distance away, you can easily tell those cars. And GT traffic, of course, right behind the final P2 car, which is the Oak machine.
I was just trying to gauge, looking down the long, long back straight from turn 14 back to the start of the straight at 13, whether we could see the lead of the Toyotas, the one that didn't come in for a second pit stop, along with Alexander Wurz at the wheel. And the answer was you couldn't, but it must have been just out of shot. Now, a bit of activity down in the Audi pit garage, but it doesn't look as though they're going to be calling their drivers in, but they are standing out taking a look at the action. Of course, they're out, the Audis, no, they're going back into the pit garage now. The Audis are running third and fourth, Andre Lotterer third, Lucas Di Grassi fourth, but the race at the moment still under that safety car that greeted the leaders when they completed their first lap, when Romain Dumas came round having led away from the front row of the grid. And so we've had remarkably little racing. How much longer it's going to go on for? Because I'm fairly sure they've cleared up all of the... they've certainly cleared up the two broken cars. Just seen the KCMG Morgan Judd being put on a flatbed and removed. We're fairly sure they've shifted all the remains of the back end of that car that was sort of scattered by the AF Corsa Ferrari. Poor Gian Maria Bruni must just be thinking his stars fell out of alignment. Now, looking on the roof, those lights are still going on this safety car. We're having many more laps than we expected. We thought it might be 2, possibly 3 laps for the clear-up. Toyota's used the opportunity to come in the pits, and Buemi enjoyed it so much he came back for a second visit.
I'm told the safety car will be in at the end of the lap that it is currently on, Johnny. So whether the safety car lights have actually been switched off yet, but I've got a message saying that they'll be coming in, the safety car will be in at the end of this lap, that is lap 7 that we're on at the moment.
Yes, indeed, the safety car lights are extinguished now. I just wonder what the delay was there. Clearly there was an awful lot of debris to be cleared up, but do you remember a few years ago in a Formula 1 race, I think it was here at Shanghai, that part of the drain got clipped up, didn't it, and they had to throw the safety car to make sure that was repaired. I just wonder whether there was a little bit more of the circuit infrastructure damaged as well as so much car and debris to clear up. By the way, Graham Goodwin reports that all LMP1 cars, LMP1H teams, reckon that the race can be done in 6 stops plus the splash. So Toyota presumably taking the opportunity to do the splash now at the front end of the race, but clearly it's marginal. So have they filled the eight car on one lap, done another one around with the safety car, and then put another splash in effectively a lap later?
It's possible, and it's a brave man who disagrees with Graham Goodwin, but I think that Porsche can do the race on five stops anyway without having to worry about any slashing and dashing. Porsche can run the whole race from now because they've had the pace sufficiently reduced by that safety car to be able to save fuel, and they will be able to run it on five stops. Toyota clearly was looking at a splash, and that's the splash that they've just done. They'll be hoping for no more safety cars now. What I don't understand is why that extra one came in from Buemi. I think an extra splash makes no sense at all, but on the other hand, they may have just been saying we're at the back of the safety car queue anyway, the safety car isn't coming in yet, let's just put in an extra lap's worth of fuel. But to be honest, I don't think that would have needed it to get them to the flag.
Well, Paul, very exciting. The racing is underway again, and Andre Lotterer fancied going up into second place there. He was nibbling away at the tail of Brendan Hartley, but Hartley waited for the moment and then dispatched him. So it's Porsche's 1 and 2. Dumas from Hartley, Lotterer, who had that little feisty moment, is third. Lucas Di Grassi is fourth. And then, of course, Besh and Lima in the rebellions. And I have to look way down the timing screen. I can't quite even see where the lead of the two Toyotas are. Of course, they drop right down to the tail of this 27-car field. But, of course, it's 25-car field because we've lost the KCMG Morgan Judd. And, of course, we've lost 51. AF Corsa Ferrari. Two of those under-race, 25 cars left on board.
Alexander Wurz, Bruce, I can tell you, is up into 18th place now already from 25th where he was, and moving up all the time, obviously overtaking slower GT cars. That won't be long at all, I don't think, before he's going to be into the top five.
Well, the drivers obviously trusted that the debris was all cleaned up, because the first time they were released, they get down to turn 10, and in the GTE Pro class, the first two cars drove straight over the curbing on the outside of turn 10. But no damage so far. So Stefan Mucha, well, he was holding the lead in that class, but getting very close as the Porsche nibbles away at his tail.
So halfway round, what is this, lap 9, and three P2 cars working their way into turn 14 at the end of this very, very long straight. Then the first of the Toyotas as well, and Buemi making ground on some of the GT traffic. So this is going to be where the drivers earn their money. Almost a GT car turning in on the Toyota there as they made their way into turn 14. So having to deal with traffic, but of course this is for position rather than the Toyotas having to lap these cars.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is the fact that with that including that extra pit stop, Buemi's only two positions, but one car between he and the sister car of Alexander Wurz, but less than 100 metres, so he really actually got quite a lot of benefit. But of course, how much fuel did they put in?
So it's Romain Dumas who leads the race from teammate Brendan Hartley, the two 919 hybrids out front and separated by probably a second. Then the two Audis that are slowly losing touch with the quicker Porsches, Andre Lotterer and Lucas Di Grassi, Matthias Besch and Fabio Lima in the rebellions, 12 and 13 respectively, 5th and 6th. Then the first of the LMP2 cars, which is the G-Drive Racing Ligier with Olivier Pla at the wheel. So that's 7th overall, but leading P2 from Ryan Dial in the Extreme Speed Motorsports HPD.
Well, you know, you commented that it got quite close for Buemi. He got chopped. He was right in the thick of the LMGTE Pro battle between the 92 Porsche with Fred Macchiavicchi on board and Stefan Mucha. Those have been rejoined. He's got past, but going down into that hairpin, turn 14, he dived down the inside in the Toyota, and that was just the moment that Fred was thinking, maybe I'll got the inside of the Porsche. They didn't quite touch, but there was precious little space between them.
Total of 21 minutes under the safety car to kick off this sixth round of the season. Not what any of the teams would have expected, I'm sure. I think you always try and factor into your strategy there will be an opening lap incident, but quite the fact that it would last 21 minutes will be something that they will now have to thrash out in terms of where they might go during the race. Clearly Toyota already starting to think outside the box a little bit and get off kilter with other cars. But it will be interesting to see just how many pit stops Porsche do need to make. If it is five, then they may well have the advantage leading the race and having to do less stops than Toyota. Nose to tail for the lead of the GT battle, NGT Pro, with number 97 Stefan Mucha fending off Fred Makiewicz in the number 92 Porsche. Over the line they go.
And not far behind them, maybe about another second behind, is James Collado in the 71 AF Corsa entry. Of course, that's the only one remaining in the GTE Pro Class, because Gianmaria Bruni, the car, is back in the garage now, having been dragged back in on a flatbed. But, you know, we talk about first lap incidents, and normally that would involve a clash of cars. There was a clash of cars, but it wasn't caused by a driver doing anything wrong. It was simply a mechanical problem, and Bruni had nowhere else to go.
Yep. Well, I was going to say unsighted. He kind of wasn't. He was just presented with the KCMG car, which he thought would be a heck of a lot quicker out of turn 10 than his Ferrari 458. And all of a sudden, it just a box full of neutrals, as you say, for Imperatore went nowhere, and the Ferrari slammed into the back of it. Sadly, both cars eliminated on the spot. Porsche is getting very close to one another at the head of the order, I notice, with Brendan Hartley reeling in Romain Dumas.
Yes, he is. Brendan Hartley's last lap time, practically a second quicker in the number 20 than Romain Dumas in the number 14. Fastest lap of the race, though, going to Sebastian Buemi on his previous lap at 1:49.974. So serving notice, despite the traffic that Toyota is in. The two Porsches, as you say, Johnny, on their own out at the end of the field, but the Toyotas in traffic can lap more quickly than the Porsches out at the head of the field.
Well, that's quite ominous, isn't it? Because now they've got that extra bit of fuel on board. They've got the pace. So now, this seesaw. You know, we're just half an hour in, and now Porsche are going to have to start thinking, have they stolen a march on us, or are we confident we can do one pit stop fewer?
that's going to be the $64,000 question, isn't it? I mean, I was expecting, if we hadn't have had the safety car, the two Porsches to stay out until lap 31. Now, we're only on lap 12 at the moment, so still plenty of fuel aboard those two Porsches. But given that they've been behind the safety car, they'll have been saving fuel behind the safety car, I would think they'll be able to stay out until lap 33 or 34 at the very least. And the Audis, I suspect, are going to be the first of the leading LMP1s to be making their pit stops. Their stops at around about lap 28, 29, something around that margin, I would suggest. Of course, behind the safety car, cars able to save an awful lot of fuel.
Well, the Toyotas, Paul, just noticing that they are nose to tail now, because Buemi's got right under Wurz's rear wing, and they're up into, they've just passed Ryan De Jell's Extreme Motorsport, or one of them has. So that's up into 8th place now for Alexander Wurz, and Buemi will also flash past the HPD down the back straight, has done that nice and easily. They have the pace and they're really taking a go at it. Just to touch on the order though, it's Romain Dumas, he's leading, as we know from earlier. Brendan Hartley right at half a second behind, so it's Porsche's 1 and 2. The Audis are running 3 and 4 with Lotterer ahead of Lucas Di Grassi, Matthias Besch leading Fabio Lima. So they go 2-2-2, they're all in pairs with the Rebellions 5th and 6th. And Olivier Pla is holding down 7th place, leading LMP2. And then come the Toyotas, and by golly, they're on the move.
Fred Makiewicz leaving his braking to the very last moment into Turn 3 there. And, well, another foot, and he would have slammed into the back of the Aston. There was not a lot between Stefan Mucha and Fred Makiewicz. It's opened up a bit more now, but you were turning away to read the screen, Bruce, a moment or two ago. I thought there had been contact as we were being shown a replay. But Makiewicz charging hard. Looks like that Porsche is possibly more stable into Turn 3 than the Aston, and it caught Fred out a bit. In fact, there's a lock-up that time from Mucha into Turn 14 at the end of the long, long straight.
And you don't want to be doing that, because, of course, that will put little square bits on your tyre, and you do have to brake incredibly heavily down into the corner. And ironically, that was the first lap that Mucha went down without the Porsche attached to his rear wing. We're about 4 car lengths difference after that mistake by Makiewicz, but he really was pushing hard, so a little bit of a mistake from Mucha there. Let's hope it doesn't have big ramifications.
The Toyotas are totally together now, having got past Ryan De Jell in his Extreme Speed Motorsports HPD. So they run 8th and 9th on the road, 7th and 8th in class. It's nice and neat and tidy, actually, as far as P1 classification is concerned, because the 7th, 8th and 9th place cars in P1 are cars 7, 8 and 9.
Very good. And in fact, they've also just dispatched the G-Drive Racing LMP2 class leader, so they're now 7th and 8th, the Toyotas.
And yeah, it was Mucha's mistake. Clearly he's feeling under pressure from Fred Makovicki, the Frenchman, in the German car, the Porsche. And as I say, Makovicki was almost in Mucha's boot at turn three. So turning the screw is Fred Makovicki, and Mucha looking to respond, just asking a bit too much of the tyres as he turned into turn 14. So at the head of the GT battle, it's Aston from Porsche, from Ferrari in the form of James Calado, and then the second of the Porsches, number 91,
which is Richard Leitz, who's at the moment going through turns 11 and 12 and will now be into turn 13 to go on the back straight. Maybe he can start to mount an attack on James Calado, but certainly the driver doing the attacking in that class is Fred Makovicki, who's giving Stefan Mucha no moment's rest. And of course Mucha will now know that his front left tyre is not what it should be after locking up 1.5 laps ago, so he's really going to have to watch tyre wear on that Porsche as this stint unfolds. Leading the way, still the Porsche's sister cars, of course, the 919 hybrids. Romain Dumas leading the way, 3/4 of a second now clear of Brendan Hartley. It seems to be settling down, and obviously they do get that long chance down that long, long back straight to have a look at all their gauges. The rest of the circuit, it's super busy.
Here's Paul Trusswell.
Yeah, the two Toyotas have swapped round, haven't they? I'd kind of missed the fact. You may have already mentioned it, but Buemi has got himself ahead of Wurz. So they were 7 and 8 in position 7 and 8. Well, they're now 8 and 7 in position 6 and 7, as the two Toyotas have now split the two Rebellions to take in position 6 and 7 then. But Buemi's got himself ahead of Wurz. Didn't actually see when that happened, but it was another faster lap time from the Swiss driver at the wheel of the Toyota number 8. Remember, the number 8 car is the one that only has two drivers, Anthony Davidson and Sebastian Buemi, going it alone. But Buemi is ahead, and Lucas Degrassi was lapping pretty quickly in the Audi number 1, setting a purple sector 2 on that previous lap. So we were saying in the lead up to the show, the Audis don't have the pace. They may not have the pace of a Toyota, but they're not far off the pace of a Porsche. The gap between the two Porsches, nothing at all, as Bruce has been saying, but it's only 5 seconds on lap 15 now, back to the Audis in third and fourth places.
Is that surprising you, Paul?
That the Audis are on the pace with the Porsches? No, not really, because I think what Porsche try and do is to moderate their outright pace. They're certainly quick in over one lap, but I think they moderate their outright pace in race setup mode somehow. And so I think that you know, the Porsche's race pace is much slower than their qualifying pace, whereas the Audi's qualifying pace, race pace, it's all the same. It's as fast as the car will go.
Moment or two ago, Bruce and I looked at each other because we thought there'd been a lead change in GT Pro, but it was in fact Pedro Lamy who's catching the second of the Porsches, Richard Leitz. So we saw Porsche ahead of Aston, but actually it's the lead GT Am Aston which is catching the fourth placed GT Pro car. And I don't think there's been a position change quite yet. I'll get you word on that in just a moment as one of the Audis works its way through. It's the number one Audi, in fact, driven by Lucas Degrassi, the Brazilian, trying to get its way through traffic. Porsche's so close here. This is the 919 hybrids. The two leading Porsches are feet away from each other as they're darting between traffic. This spells disaster to me almost, but I know they're highly skilled drivers. They're just racing a bit too close on my liking, at the same time having to dodge between Aston Martins and Ferraris. It's all a bit fraught.
But they're also doing it at a stretch of the track, turns 1, 2, 3 and 4, where it's hard enough to get yourself around the corner, let alone spotting a very low prototype coming in and trying to nip down your inside. So I think they have to pick their moments really, really quite carefully. But it's still 20, Brendan Hartley in second place, and 14 leading the way, Romain Dumas. But they've picked their way through a glut of traffic, and now maybe they can get some clear lapping. But let's see their pace. Yes, they lost quite a bit of lap time. They've been lapping in the high minute 1 minute 50s. That was a 1 minute 53 for both of them. So obviously they did back off a little bit through the traffic.
The two Toyotas, meanwhile, are now in fifth and sixth places. So we've got Porsche's first and second, Audi's third and fourth, Toyota's fifth and sixth. The gap, Sebastian Buemi in fifth place, is now just 17 seconds behind Lucas de Grassi's Audi, and he's lapping 1.3 seconds faster. So it's going to take him 10 laps, but that's going to be before the Audis come in for their scheduled pit stop. So by my reckoning, the two Toyotas will be in amongst, if not ahead of the Audis, before the Audis make their pit stops. And just to reiterate, my view is, my reading of the strategy is that the Audis will be the first of the P1Hs to stop. I think the Rebellions will be in a little bit earlier because they have a slightly that they have higher fuel consumption without the hybrids, but I think the Audis will be the first of the manufacturer P1 cars, the LMP1H cars, to make their scheduled pit stops, as I said, round about 28, 29 laps in.
Car way off onto the grass there. I thought it was going to dart into the pit lane. It was one of the Aston Martins. I'm not sure whether it was the one of the AM cars. I think it probably was, actually, as the Toyota number 8 Sebastian Buemi laps it, but it's way down into more LMP GTE AM traffic. So it wasn't Pedro Lamy. It will have been, I would think, therefore, Richie Stanaway in the number 95 car, who's battling away with Wolf Hensler and Paolo Roberti. There's a queue of GTE AM cars, and that was through the final corner, Bruce, turn 16. Richie Stanaway almost in the pit lane.
Yeah. I mean, what you have there, you have the grass, and then we have the gravel trap, and then you have a little bit of grass and the pit lane. We saw Alexander Wurz getting a bit wrong in that very tight pit entry, but he must have got pretty much to the far side of the gravel trap before he rejoined just where the pit wall starts to spring out. So that would have woken him up. At least at this stage in the race, there shouldn't be too much debris on the outside there for him to pick on his tyres. But what was interesting to me was the way that Sebastian Buemi just came in behind them, and he passed four GTE class cars on the first half of the start-finish straight. So he really had great speed there, lapping in the 1 minute 50s, the Toyotas, seemingly at ease and almost even with traffic. So they really are the fastest cars on the track at the moment. And I noticed one of the LMP, the Rebellions, having to really flash his lights to not be delayed as he picked off one of the AF Corsa Ferraris. But of course, I have to check the number on the side of that car. That could be the 8-star motorsport car, couldn't it, of course? Because using an AF Corsa Ferrari this weekend in place of their regular, easy-to-spot for us commentators, orange car.
Yeah, Richie Stanaway, Wolf Hensler, Paolo Roberti in the red 8-star motorsports car, and Max Vexvier are all together in one clump of GTE AM cars, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th on the road, but that puts them 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th places in the AM category as the Porsches make their way, the 919 hybrid Porsches make their way down to turn 6. Still no more further apart than they have been for the last couple of laps, so circulating certainly in formation here, but with less traffic to deal with.
And Johnny, the two Audis, if anything, are closing in on the two Porsches. Now they've got the Toyotas behind them to give them the hurry up, as it were. Fuel load coming down a little bit as well, perhaps. But the gap between the second place Porsche, Brendan Hartley in number 20, and the third placed Audi, Andre Lotterer in number 2, down to just 2.5 seconds now. So that gap coming down, and as much as anything else, I think that's the result of improved pace from the Audis. So all six of the top six lapping on that last lap in the 1 minute 51s, the slowest of them actually was Alexander Wurz in the number 7 car on that last lap. He was just outside the 51s, 52.1, but some very quick lapping done indeed by the Audis, and indeed a fastest lap of the race thus far on his last lap by Lucas de Grassi in the number 1 Audi. 1 minute 50.877 is the fastest lap that we've seen from that car, number 1, on his 18th lap.
Paul, I must say, just looking at the images, I really do feel that Brendan Hartley's getting a bit fed up with being in second place.
He needs to get past.
He does need to get past. I think he's got more pace than Dumas.
Yeah.
Maybe this is why the Porsches are not pulling away anymore and the Audis are starting to come in, but certainly it almost looked like a Formula Ford race there, because Brendan Hartley was dipping this way and that way. He wants to get through, but Dumas is driving in the middle of the track, as he's absolutely entitled to do. But certainly, maybe Dumas doesn't have the image of the Audis closing in, but certainly Brendan Hartley does, and he wants to get into the lead of the race.
Is the thought going through Porsche's head, though, that, you know, one car here is being delayed and we could be in a slightly better position, as in, you know, a couple of tenths or full seconds further up the road, and certainly have one car away and clear and not have to be worried about these Audis? Romain Dumas doesn't quite have the pace for me, and is being reeled in by Lotterer and Lucas Degrassi. But for me, Dumas is acting as a cork in the bottle here for Brendan Hartley.
Interesting question, Johnny. Yes, I'm sort of smiling to myself because I'm wondering what's going on in the messages between the pit wall and the two Porsche drivers, because we do have this, let's say, fuel economy, fuel efficiency element of this, where yes, the Porsche probably can go faster, but they do need to bear in mind the fuel usage regulations and the way that the car is used. And Brendan Hartley, by sitting just behind Romain Dumas, could actually be saving a lot of fuel. But as you say, he was the one who was darting in and out, and if anything, Dumas is the experienced, wise old endurance racer who's going to say, oh yeah, I've got loads of fuel in my car, thank you very much. Brendan can dart around all he likes, but he's going to be using up fuel as he does so. And even if Brendan Hartley would go ahead and start to stretch his lead, then he'd start using more fuel.
Still, this cracking battle in GTE AM continues. Wolf Henser and Mathieu Vaxivière and actually Paolo Roberti all going hammer and tong for third, fourth and fifth. And a smoky Richie Stanaway, I noticed, in the foreground of that shot. Now, he's broken away from the three cars behind him. It was Stanaway, of course, that ran very, very wide coming out of turn 16 a couple of laps ago onto the start and finish line. Ryan DL now just jumping past this GT traffic, but there are three GTE AM cars very tightly bunched indeed. The two Porsches certainly getting my attention, with Mathieu Vaxivière getting a bit impatient in the wheel tracks of Wolf Henser. Meanwhile, 2.3 seconds separates the second placed Porsche 919 of Brendan Hartley and the first of the Audis, André Lotterer.
Very, very quick lap from the lead chaser of that group, which of course Sebastian Buemi. He's had already two pit stops, up into fifth place, dropping the sister Toyota with Alexander Wurz. He did a 1:49.625 last time around, the only driver below 1:50, and really looking very good. But of course, the Audi drivers can't see him, but they and the Porsches that are the first and second in this race will be kept in the loop about where the Toyotas are. They're 17 seconds down on the lead of the race at the moment, with Buemi really going great guns indeed in number 8.
And it's a new fastest lap, Bruce, for Sebastian Buemi in the number 8. A 1:49.625 on lap 19 for Sebastian. Just going through to complete his 20th lap in 1:49.9, so a slightly slower lap next time around, but still faster, significantly faster than any of the cars ahead of him. And that gap, remember, was 22 seconds, now down to just 12 seconds between Buemi and Lucas Degrassi in the Audi ahead of him. But still, what, 7, 8, possibly 9 laps of fuel on board for the Audis, so still time for the Audis to make hay whilst the sun is shining.
I'm just wondering about tyre wear, just looking at the way that Hartley's really starting to throw his car around, getting quite tail happy going out of turn 2 into turn 3 there. Of course, it's a point where you're going over a crest, it is quite easy to get the tail around, but I think Hartley might be working his, you think he might be saving fuel by being running right behind Romain Dumas, but I think he's eating the tyres, so what he's gaining he's losing.
Indeed so, and it's a good point, Bruce, because of course these tyres that Hartley, well indeed all the LMP1 cars are the cars on which they did the qualifying, so they've not just had the laps of the race thus far, but they've also had the laps that the cars did during the qualifying session yesterday afternoon. So that is a valid point, and Shanghai is fairly heavy on tyres. These long, fairly tight radius corners do take it out on tyres, and I would expect every pit stop to be a tyre change pit stop. I don't think we're going to get any fuel only pit stops. I think they're going to be pretty much all fuel and tyres.
Leaders, race leaders into turn 14 then, to head through this very tight right-hand hairpin, and the Audis, I think, continue to gain ground. We'll check this at the end of the lap, but at the start of this lap, which was lap 21.8 of a second between race leader Romain Dumas and Brendan Hartley, that's come down by a tenth of a second, and as the Audis go across the line, has the gap altered between Hartley and Andre Lotterer? Yes, it has. That's also come down as well. So Lucas Degrassi still there in fourth position, fifth place Sebastian Buemi, sixth place Alexander Wurz. Buemi is certainly catching Degrassi as well, so the gap between fourth and fifth is pinching up.
Well, it's worth pointing out, Johnny, that the gap between first, which is still Romain Dumas in the number 14 Porsche, and Lucas Degrassi in the fourth place Audi, is 3.7 seconds. It's coming down and down, and the gap back to fifth place, which is now Sebastian Buemi, still closing in another lap in the 1 minute 49s, is just under 15 seconds. So he's shaved 7 seconds off in fewer laps than that. So definitely going very well indeed for Toyota. But I'd say actually this, the team that's possibly almost happiest is Audi at the moment, because they were dropped very easily before the safety car came out on their opening lap. They were falling away just ahead of the Rebellions, but they're right in the thick of it now.
Yeah, but of course being caught by the Toyotas behind them, well, certainly by Buemi, not so much by Alexander Wurz on the 21st lap of the race. What of the Rebellions? Last time around, Matthias Besch did a 154.5, which is about 4 seconds adrift of the six works cars ahead of him. Fabio Lima, a similar lap time, just about 2 tenths short of it. So Besch and Lima, 7th and 8th in the overall standings, lapping similarly times for the 12 and 13 cars. Then the first of the LMP2 machines is still Olivier Pla in that Ligier JSP2 with its Nissan engine, the G-Drive entered car. So number 26 rather, leads that class ahead of the 30 car of Ryan Diehl, and 27, the first of the SMP Racing Orica's of Nicolas Manassian.
Change of lead, because Brendan Hartley has finally got past Romain Dumas as they came across the start finish line there, Johnny. The number 20 Porsche now ahead of the number 14, and that's the first change of lead that we've had in this 6 hour race.
Certainly is. So an impressive time there from Brendan Hartley, and able to get through leads by just a hundredth of a second at the end of lap 22. And now we get the opportunity to see how much Brendan Hartley was being held up by Romain Dumas, if at all, and also whether he has cooked those tyres early in the stint. Well, sort of partway through the stint now. Of course, we're not far away from the first stops, but of course you've still got to think about the fuel saving mode as well that perhaps Brendan Hartley needs to take into account. I just wonder whether Romain Dumas was put in front of Hartley as like a banker, and the team said to Brendan, okay, you can go as quick as Romain, but don't go any quicker because we need to be in this fuel save mode early on in the race. Now that Brendan Hartley, the Kiwi's got in front, I wonder what's going to happen next.
Well, we'll get to see. Just one thing I want to pick up, when we just talked about LMP2, pointing out that Olivier Pla is leading the G-Drive Racing Ligier from Ryan DL's HPD. The gap is about 8-9 seconds, just to give you a guide on that, and then it's about another dozen seconds back to Nicolas Minassian in third place in LMP2 in the number 27 SMP entry.
Sebastian Buemi making his way down from turn 13 to 14. And rattling over the curbs there, the lead Porsche of Brendan Hartley. That was Hartley overtaking the 14 car.
They've changed places again and coming across the start finish line.
Very nearly, yes. Still the 20 in front, so Hartley able to defend into turn one from Romain Dumas. But Dumas,
but he's got the Audis right on his tail, and now they've got the Lotus, as I'll call it for the moment, right in their path. Luckily, that has pulled out of their way. Oh, no, it hasn't, but it may very shortly as they go up towards turn six. He should be able to stay on the outside of the track. But it's not just the two Porsches coming through. And now I'd say the first four cars are covered by 1.5 seconds. It was 3.5 seconds, just one lap ago. So the Audis have closed right in onto the tail of those battling Porsches. Brendan Hartley still in the lead of the race, but we thought he'd pull away once he got past Dumas, and he certainly isn't.
No, Dumas is keeping him honest in second position. Pierre Caffam, incidentally, in the Lotus CLM, was just basically parked way up on the top of the curb there to allow all four leaders to head through together. Now out of turn 10 and down towards this tight sequence of corners 11, 12 and 13 that come one after the other after the other onto then the long back straight, and it's still very fraught with two Porsches heading two Audis, Hartley out front from Romain Dumas, his teammate André Lotterer and Lucas Di Grassi, and there's nothing to separate the two lead Porsches, and then the Audis tucked in behind 0.3 seconds, that's all between Frenchman Dumas and André Lotterer.
They've had to be very, very busy indeed picking their way past the GTE AM runners at the tail of the field, and the Audis seem to gain there. They seem to be very, very positive in traffic, certainly André Lotterer and Lucas Di Grassi. Di Grassi was the driver of those who seemed to have the greater pace earlier on, but now Lotterer is responding and he's right on the tail of Romain Dumas.
Down into turn one they go for the 25th time, a second separating Hartley and Dumas, and then a further 0.8 seconds back is André Lotterer. If anything, Lucas Di Grassi losing touch a bit with the top three on that lap. It was a slower lap from the Brazilian, 153.1 for Lucas.
Well, Lotterer's really got the taste now. He's right. He's about three car lengths behind Romain Dumas, and Dumas had a few twitchy moments just through those first sequence of corners. He is really having to push on. And we've talked earlier about tyres going off. I was worried about Hartley really hammering his, but now that the second Porsche, number 14 with Romain Dumas, that led the early part of the race, he too is looking quite twitchy on his tyres.
Just don't forget, Bruce, that the Toyotas, having changed tyres when they came in for the pit stop, they're on fresh rubber at the moment. So extra reason why they're gaining on the four cars up ahead of them. I mean, these four cars having a great battle, but being gained upon by the two Toyotas, fifth and sixth. I mean, it's amazing, really, if you just step back. I mean, nearly an hour into the race, and we're kind of sitting back and saying, yes, it's a close race, exciting. I mean, there's 5 seconds separating the first five cars after an hour of racing.
We did have 21 minutes under the safety car, I suppose we could also
add. We
did,
yes, absolutely.
But nevertheless, I'm not knocking this, Paul. Please let me assure you of that, because this is thoroughly enjoyable. This is like what we had at Austin for the first, I don't know, 7 or 8 laps. But we, as you say, we're 55 minutes into this, and it shows no sign of dying down. And the thing is that with the Toyotas having played some kind of strategy, although we learned that the 8 car had a fueling issue, don't know an awful lot more about that, but nevertheless the 8 car of Sebastian Buemi, they struggled to get fuel in it, I think, on the first attempt, and that's the reason why he had to come in again. Let's hope that that's not going to be an issue for the rest of this race. But they have started the race on the back foot, had to think about how they would approach the race from that point on, and there is a theory about the Toyotas needing 6 stops plus a splash, and maybe that they've done the splash at the front end of the race rather than the end of it. Porsches may only have to stop 5 times. Equally, they don't quite have the race pace of the Toyotas, but with the Toyotas down in 5th and 6th and having to really work hard to catch the leading quartet, this is a race that is ebbing and flowing, and therefore serving up a fabulous entertainment, I'd say, with 1 hour very nearly completed of this 6-hour race.
I think we really have to thank Toyota for making that call to come in. It's certainly spicing the racing up. We can see that their drivers have the ultimate pace at the moment, and certainly Sebastian Buemi in the number 8 car that's running in 5th place overall is. How far is he down on the leader? He was last time around 7.7 seconds, so bear in mind that's a car that's had 2 pit stops. It wasn't just the one splash and dash, as you mentioned moments ago, Johnny. The problem with getting the fuel into that car led to the second one under the safety car. Now we do have pit visitors again, because a pit stop, and Paul called that right again. He said the Rebellions would be the first to come in, and Matthias Besch has just made his pit stop in the number 12. Came in from 7th place overall.
And James Calado's come in the number 71 Ferrari as well, from, I would assume, still 3rd position, because it was behind the Aston of Stefan Mucha and the first of the Porsches of Fred Makovicki. So Calado comes in too. Of course, the sister car no longer in the race. If you're just joining us now, sadly we lost the 51 AF Corsa Ferrari, championship leader in GTE Pro, on the first lap. It collided with the KCMG P2 car after the KCMG machine just lost drive out of turn 10, and the Ferrari, right up its tailpipes, had no time to react, ploughed into the back of the prototype, and we lost both cars on the spot.
Well, just that was a fuel-only stop for the Rebellion, Matthias Bech, then using the tyres they used in qualifying, but also keeping them on for a second stint. That's a surprise to me. But the Rebellion team then keeping the same tyres for Matthias Bech.
And when he came back out, Paul, he slotted in just behind Brendan Hartley, leading the race, but ahead of Romain Dumas. There now seems to be a bit of a gap between the two Porsche 919 hybrids, and Hartley is pulling away, as we thought he would. But for the first lap or two after he took the lead, Dumas really, really was fighting back. But I did air some concern that it then suddenly seemed that Dumas' tyres seemed to be the ones that had had more of a battering than Hartley's, and maybe that is being played out as we speak, and the gap between them is 2.2 seconds, so the Kiwi is getting away in the lead.
Yeah, the gap between second and third is now closer than the gap between first and second, isn't it? Dumas has Lotterer closer to the back end of him than he is to the back end of Brendan Hartley in the Porsche.
And of course, in the sort of ebbing and flowing, it could also be just that Hartley got a better run because he was at the head of that group, got a better run past some back markers and eke that gap out. We'll have to look at how their lap times go, but certainly, in fact, Hartley is winding it up. A 1 minute 50.7 was precisely a second quicker last time round than Dumas in second place. So yes, that's why it's going out. It's not just down to traffic.
Matthias Bech has rejoined in 10th position overall, so behind the first two P2 cars. Although, as I say that, Ryan Diehl pits from 9th position. So that will leave Olivier Pla out in front by a fair margin. Well, even before Diehl pitted, actually, he was out in front by a fair margin. It's two Dunlop shod cars that lead P2 then, G-Drive Racing from the Extreme Speed Motorsport.
Well, I think the excitement this lap is going to be whether Sebastian Buemi can depose Di Grassi to go into fourth place overall. He's had those two pit stops, those two splash and dashes, and he has worked his way back up through the order. He got past Alexander Wurz because Wurz got out of the pits ahead of him. Buemi, what a starring opening stint, and his next target is right in front of him now, and that's Lucas Di Grassi.
So we've had Collado pit, we've had the 12 car of Matthias Bech pit, also the 30 machine of Ryan Diehl, which you mentioned, and 31 and 37 also coming in for a stop. So that's the other Extreme Speed Motorsports car, the HPD, together with 37 SMP Racing machine, which has Kirill Ladygin still at the wheel. So the other SMP, Orica, stays out. Nicola Minasio is up to 11th on the road and third in class, although we need to find out where Ryan Diehl is going to feed back into the mixture after his first stop. Looking like second place, actually.
And the race, or the LMP2 leader, also in now, Johnny, the number 26 Ligier, Olivier Pla, brings that car in. So pretty much all of the LMP2's pit stops now having taken place, with in fact Nick Manassian in as well with the 27 SMP. I thought he might go an extra lap and therefore be able to take the lead of the LMP2 class, but he hasn't. So Olivier Pla and Nick Manassian both in the pits on the same lap number 27 for them.
Well, I thought Buemi might be able to catch Di Grassi on that last lap. He hasn't managed it, but he's now got clear sight and he's about four car lengths behind as they accelerate hard out of turn four. That sort of seemingly never-ending left-hander go through the right-hand kink on the run-up to turn six, the hairpin, the first proper hairpin of the lap, and he is right under the tail of the Brazilian Audi driver in the battle for fourth place overall. They go through those fast sweepers, turn six and seven behind the pits, a fantastic stretch of the circuit behind the paddock, I should say. Of course, the paddock, with those, they don't have just little cabins, they have those houses that you or I would be very happy to live in, dotted around the little cluster of lakes, and it certainly doesn't feel as though you're at a race circuit when you go to those cabins. Not that Di Grassi had a chance to think about those, as he had Sebastian Buemi right behind him. They're now running up towards turn 11, which is the left-hander that leads into the sort of what we call the faraway sequence. It's sort of the mirror image, if you will, of turns 1, 2, 3 and 4. And certainly the Toyota number 8 is really pushing very, very hard indeed. But a good acceleration out of turn 13 by Lucas Di Grassi, and in fact seems to be pulling away very slightly down that long back straight.
GTE Pro leader is in the pits. Tell you more about that in just a second, but we are at the end of the first hour of this sixth round of the championship, the World Endurance Championship for 2014 here in Shanghai. It's RadioLeMond.com with Paul Truswell, Bruce Jones and me, Johnny Palmer. We will take you through hour two in just a moment.
The FIA World Endurance Championship, exclusively live on RadioLeMond.com.